And as always, thank you for your support of KBOO.
Hi, I'm Eileen with the Oregon Cultural Trust. Community radio means access to music, news, and programming for everyone. That's why I support KBOO with my contribution every year. It's also why I match that gift to the Oregon Cultural Trust. When you make a gift to KBOO, make a matching gift to the Cultural Trust by December 31st. Then you can use the cultural tax credit next year to reduce your state tax bill. It's true. And it's also how KBOO supporters guarantee access to cultural programming in Portland and all around the state. Visit culturaltrust.org today to learn more before December 31st.
Good morning. It is just about 10 o'clock, and you are listening to KBOO Portland at 11 on Stage and Studio. Dimay Roberts speaks to musician Joe Kai about his new album, and he'll perform songs from his album, Migrants. And at 11:30, Art Focus talks to Eric Bone of Metalwood Salvage, a Northeast Portland workshop that takes usable and unique material and turns it into furniture, fixtures, and art. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved. Go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. And right now, Air Cascadia is off this week, so we will get flashpoints for the full hour with Dennis Bernstein.
Flashpoints, foreign policy, and the Trump administration. Also, the UN General Assembly passes a resolution in support of the Palestinians and their claims to East Jerusalem. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, Donald Trump outlined his vision for foreign policy, gave a big speech in Washington, D.C., and we want to get some response. So joining us is Matthew Ho. Matthew Ho is a member of the advisory boards of the Expos Facts, Veterans for Peace and World Beyond War. In 2009, Mr. Ho resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the escalation of the Afghan war. That was by the Obama administration. And welcome back to Flashpoints, Matthew Ho. And I want to ask you about the speech, but just because you sort of began this part of your, if you will, oppositional career in response to the expanding war in Afghanistan. What's your take now? We've been there, well, I don't know, 16, 17 years. Any better feelings? Sort of regrets about resigning?
Hi, Dennis, and thank you for having me on. It's been over 16 years now for American forces in Afghanistan, and more importantly for the Afghan people. This war has been going on since the 70s, much of it propelled by and supported by outside involvement. So I think, you know, I look back, because it's now been 2009, it's what, 2017 now, so it's been 8 years since I resigned. You know, I think if you were to tell me back then that this level of tragedy, this level of folly, would be continuing at this point, 8 years on, I would have said, you know, this, my reply would have been that's ludicrous. It was just released the other day by the Pentagon that in the last 6 months, American commandos have conducted more than 2,000 raids in Afghanistan. You know, they go with the Afghan commandos, but American commandos are kicking in doors, raiding people's homes in the middle of the night, killing people in their homes, taking them prisoner in their homes, over 2,000 times in Afghanistan in the last 6 months. As well as then, too, the escalation of the airstrikes that we've seen in Afghanistan, as we've seen throughout the Muslim world, the escalation of the airstrikes, both from drones and from manned aircraft. I'd say that's ludicrous. But here we are, and that poor country and those poor, suffering people are no closer to seeing a end to the violence anytime. And the money continues to pour in to support the war. People continue to get rich off of the war. The opium trade continues to expand and blossom, and the people of Afghanistan still suffer. And I think that's where there's such a great sadness I have for them, as well as for people throughout the Muslim world. And of course, we can tie it into what's happening here in our own country, you know, in a sense, right?
You know, and it's interesting that there are sort of two major things that Trump has done when it comes to Afghanistan. One is drop the mother of all bombs, just short of a nuclear weapon. And the other one is, you know, taking the gloves off, as in no dates about withdrawal, anything like that. You know, if we're there 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, so be it. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm glad you brought up the mother of all bombs, because it ties into was really the first indication of what the war strategy would be like under President Trump, as opposed to under President Obama and under President Bush. Under both of his predecessors, there was a political victory sought. There was the military aims, as immoral as I believe they were, misguided, as criminal as many people believe they were. The military aims of Bush and Obama in the Middle East, or the larger Middle East, to include Afghanistan, had a political end state in them. And they also encouraged elections. They were trying to use development assistance. They were trying to go through aspects of reconciliation. Under the Trump administration, there is no political end state. This is people who were concerned about generals in the White House, in the sense of General Kelly as Chief of Staff, General Mattis as Secretary of Defense, and General McMaster as, or Lieutenant General McMaster as, the National Security Advisor. This is what the concerns are, because you have military operations now simply for the sake of military reasons or military purposes. So the mother of all bombs is a great example. The U.S. military lies about, they say that bomb was used to go after a tunnel complex. It's a fuel-aired explosive, that bomb, basically, which means it detonates above ground and turns the entire atmosphere around the area into one big fire, one big flash. It is useless against tunnels. Against tunnels, you use a bomb that penetrates into the ground. So what the mother of all bombs was a punishment for the people of that area of Afghanistan, because in the week or two prior to that bomb being dropped, an American service member had been killed in that area. And so what you've seen, as you said, Dennis, with this taking your gloves off, you've seen this throughout the rest of the wars that America is leading, whether it be in Iraq, with how the Iraqi forces have just demolished and devastated the cities, the Sunni cities in the Euphrates and Tigris River valleys, what the Saudis and the United Arab Emirates have been doing in Yemen, what the Kurdish forces, along with the American Air Forces, have done to Raqqa, as well as other cities in eastern Syria. And this is what we're seeing now in Afghanistan as well, with the increase in airstrikes, the increase in artillery operations, and the increase in these night raids of commandos into people's homes. We have a policy of terror, of terrorizing and punishing people as a way of subjugating them. And again, this differs from the previous administrations, because the previous administrations did seek some level of reconciliation or negotiation or political solution to the as a result of the military violence. Here, the result of the military violence is at best described as subjugation. And I think that's what you see a lot of in this Trump, this ties into what Trump said in the campaign trail. Let's not forget that Trump said numerous times on the campaign trail that he was going to take the gloves off, that our wars were too politically correct, that we should be killing terrorists and their families and destroying their homes. And we now are living that reality. And I say that as I drink a cup of coffee here in Virginia. The people of these seven nations that we have active wars in are living that reality.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are speaking with Matthew Ho. He's a senior fellow with the Center for International Policy. In 2009, he resigned his position with the State Department in Afghanistan in protest of the escalation of the Afghan war by the Obama administration, while Trump has continued apace. And I want to focus you on Trump's speech yesterday. He made his big foreign policy speech, a lot of commentary. I wanted to get your take on it. I guess there are two sides to the speech, or two reasons for giving it, or two impacts. The first has to do with what is he talking about in terms of the United States government and this new policy in terms of global policy? And then, of course, let's take a look at really the target of the speech, which is his domestic crew and getting them to keep their intense support for him, that minority that makes him possible. You want to talk about this?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think that second point is still very important because, as it's been identified by a number of commentators, his speech yesterday really was a campaign speech, really was a public relations speech, really affirmed his status as the leader of the Make America Great campaign. I mean, the first things he talks about as he's addressing the national security interests of the United States are how he's recalling how 13 months prior, the American people elected him to be a glorious new hope. Those are the words he used, you know, and so the target of the speech, yeah, certainly was not Russia or China or the Islamic State or Pakistan or anyone else, but rather it was his domestic political base to affirm to them that he was the man that they believe is necessary to lead a policy of American exceptionalism, this quasi-religious, if not fully religious, view of American moral support superiority that is needed to lead the world to order. If we don't have America in this world, then there will be chaos, a very Manichaean good versus evil template, and that's what President Trump strives to fill for his supporters. In terms of the actual, what we actually saw in terms of details, you know, as in many speeches like this, a top-level strategy is going to be devoid of details, and that's why I say if you really want details, go to the budget. But you can see where, just as in similar administrations, there is a preoccupation with China, and you can see that in how we spend our defense dollars. We are building 10 new aircraft carriers, which will cost $13 billion apiece. That is geared towards an adversary like China. You see that with a new nuclear bomber for the Air Force that the Air Force refused to even say how much money that will cost. We see that with a new nuclear cruise missile, as well as a $1 trillion modernization over 30 years for our nuclear weapons, on and on and on. These types of weapons are meant to intimidate the competitors, as Trump likes to call them, that may rival our power. So in the speech, you did see the usual suspects pop up: China, Russia, Pakistan. Trump did say how well we were doing in Afghanistan, but I think everyone should look at the speech as what it primarily was, which was a reiteration of his campaign promises to, you know, make America great again, and his whole America first, doctrine, which feeds into so much of what his base believes.
Let me ask you this. I mean, the Obama administration had a very forceful and aggressive policy through what it called the pivot, the Pacific pivot, sort of drawing mm-hmm. a ring around China, trying to undermine yep. China while asking China for its support with North Korea. So that was sort of an interesting thing to think about, how the Chinese are going to deal with both those things at the same time. But Obama was extremely militant. Is Obama, can we just expect more of the same? Is it more dangerous because Trump is a little bit more volatile and dangerous? And let's just say one of his kids ends up getting, or his son-in-law gets indicted, would he get upset, nervous, need to do a distraction? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, those are great points to make, Dennis, because this is a continuation of the policies. And we really, for those of us who are progressives or on the left, we really have to look at what occurred in the Obama's 8 years that allowed this to happen. Not to go off on another course here, but say with torture, you have an administration now that says he will now, President Hussein, he'll torture again. Well, when the previous administration under President Obama did nothing to hold the people who tortured accountable, then, of course, that allows people like Donald Trump to say, we're going to torture again. In the case of, say, the Pacific pivot, where we're ringing China with military bases, as well as strike aircraft and naval ships that could just, you know, demolish anything the Chinese have. Let's not kid ourselves about the Chinese capabilities. They have expanded their military and the naval forces over the last couple of decades, but they are nothing compared to the American forces. A war with China would last maybe a few days or a week in the sense of modern, classic, conventional war. Our forces are just that much better and that much superior. But we also have to then go even further back than going back and look at what Obama did with that, just heighten those tensions. But also, too, we have to go and look back further what the Chinese have dealt with for centuries of colonization, of imperialism on Western powers. I mean, 100 years ago, the American Navy was present on the Chinese rivers. So this is just really an extension of gunboat diplomacy, or the legations that used to exist in China, and the presence of Western military forces that controlled Chinese cities. There are Chinese who have living memories of that. So that really influences them. So when they see or hear these types of words directed at them, as well as they see the American defense plan to build these new aircraft carriers, to build these new bombers, to build these new nuclear cruise missiles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, knowing that's geared towards them, the living memory they possess